You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
As we safely restore our great economy and reopen our schools, and hopefully we can watch colleges play football. We want to get football in colleges. These are young, strong people. They won't have a big problem with the China virus. So we want to see college football start. And hopefully a lot of great people are going to be out there. They're going to be out there playing football, and they'll be able to fight it off. And hopefully it won't bother them one bit. Most of them will never get it, statistically.
All right. So the president wants college football to go on, but the Big Ten and Pac-12 saw it differently, postponing their fall seasons as of right now. The Big 12, SEC, and ACC still forging ahead with their seasons. Stephen A., I realize SEC football, honestly, is a different beast, right? How important do you think the SEC's decision is on all of this?
Oh, it's going to be pivotal. It's going to be pivotal for a couple of reasons. And I'm going to extend beyond the world of sports, because we know sports intertwines with everything at this particular moment in time. And Max, I've been very, very interested in having this conversation with you because it's a conversation that I'm voluntarily instigating. And I'm certainly interested in hearing your perspective of what I have to say about this. Obviously, when we think about SEC, we think about how big time the conference is. We're looking at it from a football perspective. I'm going to extend far beyond that. I'm going to say that it's going to affect the politics of this nation potentially. We have to take into consideration that the president of the United States basically took the South when he won election with more electoral college votes. Obviously, not the popular vote, but the electoral college votes. We've heard him come out and say it would be tremendously bad and all of this other stuff if college football was canceled, not really accepting his role in terms of being responsible for all of this. Because had you been wearing a mask, had you encouraged the nation to wear a mask, had you refused to show up without a mask, had you refused to have rallies and all of this other stuff where people are conjugating or getting together with one another, rather, in close proximity with one another without wearing a mask, had you prioritized more the importance of paying attention to the ill effects of the coronavirus and the catastrophic effect it was having on the globe, not just this nation, things would have been a bit different, some would argue, and there may not have been the spike that we have witnessed in over 35 states in the United States of America. But that obviously has not been the case. And that is the reason that we're talking about the potential postponement, if not the cancellation, of college football altogether, not just the Big Ten or the Pac-12 conference. So if you're the SEC, who hasn't made that decision yet, Max, just like the ACC. Well, the ACC, what's the preeminent squad in the ACC? That would happen to be Dabo Sweeney's Clemson Tigers. Where are they located, Max? South Carolina. That's one of the states that Donald Trump took, if I remember correctly. I'm looking at a map here of the states that Donald Trump took in 2016. I see North Carolina, I see South Carolina, I see Georgia, I see Tennessee, I see Alabama, I see Mississippi, I see Arkansas, I see Louisiana, I see Oklahoma, Texas, Nebraska. I'm sorry, when you look at the ACC, when you look at the SEC, one could argue, at least in 2016, that was Donald Trump country. And so if they don't have college football and they're economically ravaged because of the absence of college football and the absence of that revenue from those local economies, how do we anticipate people are going to react to that? I don't know if they'll react that good. It remains to be seen. So it might be a bit far-fetched. I understand that. And I'm no aficionado. I'll defer to those who are. Please don't get me wrong. I'm just looking at the map here and I'm deducing logically the fact that if you end up not having college football, particularly in the SEC, who many have argued is the number one football conference and has been for years. No Nick Saban, no Ed Orgeron, no anybody. No football. No football on Saturdays. You don't have that going on? You're going to look for somebody to point the finger at. And the fact of the matter is, since it's going to be directly because the cancellation, the potential cancellation, or at least the postponement at the moment of college football is directly and totally because of the COVID-19 pandemic, you're going to look for somebody to blame. And you ain't going to be able to blame the former vice president because he hasn't been doing anything, really. It's really been about you because you're the one in office. Stay tuned. No SEC football. No ACC football, the fallout may be far more exceeding than just football and local economies. It might very well end up affecting the election in 2020.
Well, it's an interesting theory. I disagree with it for the following reasons. Number one, there's not going to be football. College football anywhere in this country, not for very long if they do indeed start, because we're in a pandemic. And so whatever the willingness of people to do, eventually it's going to get shut down. You're pointing to Trump and the fact that he, while never explicitly discouraging mask use, did say when the CDC initially issued its advisory that people should wear masks. I think this was in April. It may have been earlier than that. Trump came out and said, as memory serves, it's voluntary, and I don't think I'm going to wear one. And would show up at events without masks and make snide comments about wearing masks at times. And then recently he's changed his tune because we have the worst COVID crisis anywhere in the world, right here in the United States of America. He originally was saying it's down to 10 or 15 people. Soon it'll be zero. One day it'll magically go away. And then it got, because of that attitude, it got worse and worse and worse. And people, largely, there's a huge correlation with his supporters and those who were throwing COVID parties and not wearing masks and all that. So you would think, well, boy, that's a bad thing to do. And if, in fact, we don't get college football, even if we try, the blame will be placed on Trump for setting that example. But, in fact, what history has shown us, what literature has reflected, George Orwell's Animal Farm, right, is that if you have a cult of personality and enough people following that cult of personality, in Animal Farm, it was sheep who would just bleed out the phrase, the political slogan over and over when anyone would try to question the pig in charge, which in Animal Farm was named Napoleon. when you have enough like that, whatever happened in the past, whatever's happening now, whatever may happen in the future, doesn't matter because the leader can simply say, no, that's not what happened in the past. And will literally change people's memory of it. And so it doesn't matter what occurred until now. Blame can very easily be shifted. And in fact, we see that's constantly what's happening.
Well,
and so if there's no football in the South, Trump and other, and his allies will simply say, no, it's not our fault. This is the reason. And a lot of people in that region that you're discussing will suddenly get convenient amnesia and blame it on other people. If history, including recent history, of the world and of this country is any guide at all, and I predict it will be. So the question as to whether, then the question becomes, why is he therefore campaigning on this play college football? And give me another minute, Stephen A., because I want to address what you said. The answer is he's talking to his base, and he knows they like college football. But even then, what he said shows a shocking lack of understanding or maybe intentional misunderstanding of the situation. Yes, college football players are young and strong. Yes, they are likely at, according to all the information as I understand it, less likely to be mortally threatened by this disease than others. The point of social distancing, isolating, wearing a mask, self-quarantining, all those things is not just to protect yourself, not even primarily to protect yourself. It's primarily to protect the most vulnerable among us, the elderly, people with underlying conditions. Because if you get it, the chances are you will infect others. That's how you get a pandemic rather than crushing the curve.
Max.
So I don't know if that answers your question. I think it does.
It doesn't. It does for you. It doesn't for me. And the reason why it doesn't for me, Max, is because I get all of that. And I understand when you talk about Pac-12 and Big Ten, that's been largely Democratic, whereas obviously the South has been a bit different, even though we've seen presidents like Obama win some of those states, if not all. He didn't win all of them, but you know what I'm saying. Here's my point about Trump. You can bring up what he has said as things have worsened, but that trend, it was trending in that direction for a significant chunk of time. And he was fending that off, the rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I remember when he was being interviewed the other day, and somebody brought up, you have 6,000 people. He said, no, actually, it was 12. It was 12. Well, that makes it even worse. The fact that it was 12 and you still were not mandating that folks wear a mask was problematic. The fact that you weren't wearing a mask was problematic, because when we look at the postponement of the season, we're speaking specifically about the coronavirus pandemic and the rippling effect it has had. You don't get, you gotta pick a, you gotta pick a choice. I'm talking about Trump, not you, Max. You gotta pick a, you gotta pick a side. You cannot brag about the crowds that you're able to generate, thereby indicating the influence you have over the masses, and then ignore it at your discretion and say you have no responsibility.
Well,
when
no, this is what
awry.
I'm saying, Stephen.
It can't
a.
be
this
both
is,
ways.
This is
it's
why
one,
I disagree.
Or the
this
other.
Is why I disagree. It shouldn't be both ways. And for some people who are unsure, don't follow things closely, maybe you're right. But for an enormous percentage of the population, as has shown through polling, like there's at least 30% of the voting population where it literally does not matter what happens. Whatever happened, simply he can say, no, that didn't happen, this is what happened, or shift blame elsewhere.
Right.
And they will, if the last three, almost 4 years are any indicator, will simply follow it. So that's why I'm saying whether or not, because that's where his base is in the South, whether or not they play college football, if they don't, they'll blame someone else, and they'll remember that he tried to get it played.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to say to you, Max, is by and large, from a macro perspective, we are in total agreement. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm highlighting the SEC and the ACC. Those territories, when you consider the momentum people are at least saying, because I don't always believe the polls and all of this other stuff, but if you consider the momentum shift that people are proclaiming is taking place, and how, as a result, he's got to raise up and accordingly, you know, and act accordingly to the challenge that is presented before him. It's going to be imperative that he holds on to those swing voters. It's going to be the imperative that he holds on to independents. I'm an independent. There are others that are independents that sit back and be like, we're going to see. And if you're looking at the South in terms of the locale of some of these schools, if they're ravaged because of the pandemic and you are considered to be in large part to blame, certainly it's not his fault. People have individual responsibility. They should know how to act. You should know to wear a mask and engage in social distancing. We can't necessarily blame him directly. I'm just saying people might do that anyway. And if they're successful in doing it with just a few in those parts of the country, it could potentially swing things against him. That's the potency, I believe, the SEC has because of the money it generates. And the money it generates not just for their institutions, but local economies as well. If they don't have college football, ain't NBA, ain't Major League Baseball, ain't NFL in Tuscaloosa or Mississippi or you know, in places like that.
People care a lot about college football,
professional football, basketball there. It could be problematic. It could be problematic.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Giannis Antetokounmpo was ejected after headbutting Mo Wagner in the second quarter of yesterday's Bucks win over the Wizards. Giannis was apologetic after the game, saying he would not have done it if he could go back in time. On that note, We bring back Vince Carter. Vince, great to have you back with us. Milwaukee and the Magic are locked in that first round matchup in terms of playoff opponents. But tell me this, do you still kind of feel like the Bucks are starting to feel the pressure?
Well, I won't say they're crumbling. Feeling the pressure, I don't know. But if you've clinched, you want to go into the playoff, one, healthy and with a clear mind. Being that the way they lost last year and eliminated, you want to come into this season going into the playoffs with no distractions. And yes, they still have another game, and maybe he gets Giannis is suspended, maybe not. I don't know. But we're still going to talk about it. Then it's still there. You still have to answer these questions. You want to come into the playoffs after clinching, after what happened last year, with a clear mind, with the goal of getting rid of the eighth seed in a sweep, staying healthy, and moving forward. So I think that's the concerns. It's not an alarming issue, but it's something you don't want. You just want to go into the playoffs, round one, handling your business without any other distractions.
I would say Giannis has to be feeling the pressure right now because we all know what he is. The question we don't know is what he might be in the playoffs. So he picked up right where he left off last season, even improved on that. He was the MVP of the regular season, looked like he was taking the mantle from LeBron James. And then Kawhi stopped him and the big stopped him in the playoffs. And so the question this season is, okay, what are the Bucks? And can Giannis be his best self when it matters most? And the Bucks are what they were last year, basically wire to wire. They're the best team in the division, in the conference, rather. Same thing now. And Giannis is the best player in the world during the regular season. Same thing now, just like last year. If anything, it both maybe ticked up a little bit because Middleton has been playing the best basketball of his career this season. So the pressure, of course, in fact, when I think of the players in the NBA, certainly in the Eastern Conference, the guy with the most pressure on him by far is Giannis. Maybe you could compare him to Harden or Westbrook in the Western Conference, but I might even say Giannis has the most pressure on him because he's on top of the world in every respect, except that if you're on a team good enough to have the best record in basketball, then that team should be good enough to win the championship. Can he do it when it matters most? Now, Giannis is one of those players, guys, like Damian Lillard. If you didn't grow up in Milwaukee or Portland, you wish, you're like, damn, I wish I grew up rooting for the team that has this guy right now. Like, he's the guy you wish played for your team. Everything about him, his attitude, the whole thing. But it's not like he's on a team where it's the little engine that could. Maybe they could. He's on a powerhouse team. He may not have a second banana who's an MVP caliber player, but he's got plenty. How could he not be feeling the pressure?
Well, he's feeling pressure. There's no question about it because of how Kawhi Leonard closed the deal on him in the last four games of the Eastern Conference Finals last year. But I would contend to you, nobody's feeling more pressure than the Milwaukee Bucks. Not just the players surrounding the Greek Freak who benefit from his excellence, but more so the organization than anything else. I would remind everybody that Giannis Antetokounmpo, after this summer bubble is over, will be approaching the last year of his contract. And if the Milwaukee Bucks don't win this year, some consider this to be their best chance. And if you can't get it done this year, who's to say he's not going to be looking elsewhere? And if he's going to be looking elsewhere, then you've got a profound decision to make if you're the Milwaukee Bucks organization, because you're certainly not going to acquire anybody in free agency. They ain't gonna be too anxious to fly to Milwaukee to play basketball. So in order to sit up there and to make sure that you get equitable compensation for the greatness and the services of Giannis Antetokounmpo, you might have to move him prior to that just to make sure you pull that off. Because again, you ain't gonna acquire it via free agency or even the draft, because there ain't nobody coming out of college or from Europe that's gonna have the immediate impact equitable to Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is the reality of the situation. Whereas if you win, there's no reason for him to leave. It's his franchise. You give him the money. You're winning. Everybody wants to be around him. Even though it's a small market, he garners the level of attention that generates revenue. He still has the acclaim, the stardom. He's the reigning league MVP. Probably going to win it back to back. He'd be good to go. But if you're the Bucks, you better make sure you do everything you can to win this year, because that's going to help you when it comes to him.
Well, I'm going to say this. Would you guys agree with me when I say this? yes, there is some pressure on him to perform at a very high level and play great. Not pretty good. But at the same time, with him playing great, he's going to need his supporting cast, Middleton, who's an all-star, who's played extremely well this year. He's going to need him to play some pretty good, very good basketball. And then he's going to need the others. Brook Lopez has been playing outstanding basketball. He was phenomenal last night. But they're going to need him in that performance and in that style of play to carry over into the playoffs. Consistency is going to be the key from the supporting cast. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I would say actually the guy I'm looking at, guys, is Eric Bledsoe. Because Middleton is a solid all-star and raised his game. But you really need a crime partner, at least a third guy who can go get his own shot under pressure. Who can, you know, Bledsoe has like real superstar athletic ability. Even at his size, he can defend, he can do a lot of stuff. But in the playoffs has not been his best self. And I think that's the key guy. When I look at the team, the guy he really needs help from, of course, Middleton has to play, is Bledsoe. If Bledsoe can be the best version of himself in the playoffs, I think the Bucks could win the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm confident they'll get it together in the first round. Obviously, dealing with strange circumstances here. Vince, thank you so much for being with us. 22 years in the game. I will always listen to your opinion. Come back, visit us soon. All right, take care. When we come back here on First Take, I got a little trivia for you all. Our number 13 player, right on our First Take Primetime Players list, truly shines under the big lights. His 84 total QBR is the highest of any player since 2006, with a minimum of 200 attempts. Find out who it is here on First Take next.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com. Now, for the next installment of NFL Primetime Players, the top 15 players in the league as voted on by our panel of experts. Monday, Chandler Jones kicked off the list at number 15. Yesterday, Niners tight end George Kittle came in at 14. Today, number 13, the answer to our trivia question. His 84.7 total QBR is the highest of any player since 2006 with a minimum of 200 attempts. And the answer is...
Next up on our First Take NFL Primetime Players ranking is Deshaun Watson.
Gets away from a sack. Watson throws to the end zone. He does it again. Houdini for the touchdown.
Last season, Watson joined Steve Young as the only players in NFL history with 25 touchdown passes and 5 rushing touchdowns in multiple seasons.
Deshaun Watson, magical.
Since 2018, Watson's 11 game winning drives in the regular season and playoffs are the most in the NFL.
Somebody had to be great. Why not me?
Player number 13, Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson.
We know Watson always shines when the lights are bright. Louis Riddick here with us. Lou, great to have you. Stephen A., I'll start with you. How much pressure do you think Deshaun is under this season?
Well, I think he's under some pressure, not as much pressure as Bill O'Brien to make it work, considering some of the decisions that Bill O'Brien made. But the apps, I think he's under some pressure because, again, Lamar Jackson is the league MVP. Patrick Mahomes is clearly the man. And so you've got two quarterbacks within the AFC conference that are scheduled to do their thing, along with the return of Big Ben Roethlisberger. Then when you look at the AFC South, the Tennessee Titans are still the team to beat right now. We've got to give them their props, although it's more so because of Derrick Henry than it is because of Ryan Tannehill. But with Phillip Rivers arriving in Indianapolis, with Frank Reich coaching that team, with the kind of talent that they have on that squad, you've got to remember that you've got two teams within the same division that could potentially make some noise over Deshaun Watson, who no longer has DeAndre Hopkins at his disposal. So I would say that the pressure is still there. It's not as extreme as some would believe because of the decisions that Bill O'Brien made that I believe will hamper this franchise. But nevertheless, when you're a star the magnitude of Deshaun Watson, who's capable of doing the things that he's capable of making, of doing, you can't summarily dismiss him and eradicate the pressure or eliminate the pressure from him, because with or without the talent, do you want to be that dude? You've got to go out there and show that you can still be that guy.
Well, I think it's two different questions. It's external pressure versus internal pressure. The external pressure is alleviated by the fact that DeAndre Hopkins isn't there. Everyone knows that was an idiotic trade. You took on a bad contract and a running back and gave up an all-time great wide receiver in his prime with whom your star quarterback, still ascending quarterback, has great chemistry and everything. And obviously, without that weapon, now the pressure is a little bit alleviated externally. Internally, however, I wouldn't be surprised if Deshaun Watson feels a greater responsibility, because that's the kind of guy he has. In every sport, you have clutch performers, and they can range from good to great or even not so good under normal circumstances, and they elevate. It's a real thing. They elevate under pressure. So in football, Joe Montana is an all-time great, and under pressure, he got even better. Eli Manning was a good quarterback. Under pressure, he became an all-time great. I think about starting pitchers in my lifetime, guys who I watched, from Fernando Valenzuela to El Duque, Orlando Hernandez, Curt Schilling, John Smoltz, guys, and they range from good to great. But under pressure, they all got better. They were better versions of themselves. Deshaun Watson's one of those guys. And he's a good quarterback normally, very good quarterback normally. But when you need him most, he's a great quarterback. And that comes from, I think, guys who feel that responsibility to do it. That can crush some people if they don't know how to handle it, even the internal expectations. But Deshaun Watson thrives on it. It makes him better, clearly. So while the external pressure is less, I expect less from this team. I think many in the media do. I don't expect Deshaun Watson feels any less responsibility. If anything, I'll bet you he feels more now that DeAndre Hopkins isn't there.
Yeah, Max, I think because of what you just said, the fact that people believe that when you need him more, he becomes great, I think that kind of makes both the external and internal pressure rise for him in this coming season. Coupled with the fact that this is a young man who, look, his former coach Dabo Sweeney down at Clemson compared him to Michael Jordan, and he is someone who right now has won two consecutive division titles. They were 11-5 and 10-6. And now he also, remember this, he's now up for a contract extension, a contract renegotiation extension that he wants to be paid, I am sure, in the realm of the greats, somewhere in between Patrick and Russell Wilson. So we're talking 38, 40 million maybe plus per year. So with that being said, look, he's also being asked to do this, to become great by doing it with less. You're right. The trade away of DeAndre Hopkins is ridiculous. Think of all the ways in which the other quarterbacks, the young gunslingers in the AFC have been helped out. Think of how Patrick Mahomes has been helped out from the very get-go by Brett Veach and Andy Reid as far as putting weapons around him. Think of how Lamar Jackson is being helped out down in Baltimore by Coach Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta, the general manager, by the kind of weapons they continue to bring in for him. In Houston, what are they doing? Right now, his most explosive weapons are guys who really have an injury history, Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller. These are two guys who, when they're on the football field, they're two of the fastest, most explosive players in the NFL. But are they going to be on the football field? Are they going to be able to be depended upon? that's what Deshaun is faced with. That's where Deshaun is going to have to, like, elevate everyone around him a la Tom Brady for most of his career, minus maybe 2007, right? He's going to have to elevate everyone around him, try to take this team from being a division winner to being an actual AFC title contender, to try and get paid at the same time and doing it with less. So I think, you know, when we kind of talk about quarterbacks and talk about great players in the NFL, and quarterbacks in particular, we that's synonymous with winning. So that's really all that's going to matter when it comes to the Houston Texans is, did Deshaun Watson help them win or not? Did he take them past AFC South titles or didn't he? Was he able to defeat Patrick Holmes and Lamar Jackson or wasn't he? And you know what? If I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm saying, hey, look, stack it all against me. Stack it all against me. You call it pressure, I call it responsibility. That's what I'm here to do. That's why I'm going to get what I'm after, which is one of those big-time contracts that's going to put me up there in the upper echelon in terms of average, you know, salary per year that has ever been seen in the NFL. That's what he's after. That's the responsibility that he has. That's the challenge he has in front of him. We'll see what he does with it.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Mum's been the word for the man who can always find a microphone. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones speaking for the first time regarding social justice issues. Here's what he had to say. Brand new sound regarding players kneeling. Please take a listen.
These are very sensitive times. I have nothing to prove as far as where I'm standing with the flag and where the Cowboys stand. I have nothing to prove regarding my players and my support of our players. What I do want to show and want us all to be a part of is a word called grace. Grace. Not only grace in our actions, but grace in our understanding where they're coming from. I want our players to understand the perception and where they're coming from regarding the flag and the sensitivity there and the many memories there. And I want our fans to understand and better do because of what's gone on over the last few months. And want them to understand where our players are coming from there. And they do not feel like that the ones that want to basically do that, kneel, they do not feel like they're dishonoring the flag. I'm going to have grace. I've had grace. Many of you have written and criticized me for having too much grace and understanding regarding our players, and I probably have. And I'm going to have grace regarding the people that are sensitive about our flag. Somewhere in between there, as the weeks, as we get together with our team, as we discuss with the team, somewhere in between there is how we're going to handle it.
I wish those police had some grace for George Floyd when they stood on his neck for 8 minutes and 45 seconds, or for Breonna Taylor and her family after the killers are still walking the streets. Stephen A., I'll start with your reaction to that sound from Jerry.
Well, my reaction to it is that he came across as a bit sensitive, and obviously he was double talking because he was playing both sides. But what Jerry Jones doesn't understand is that that's perfectly reasonable. On one hand, he doesn't want to offend his customers, his constituencies, those who patronize his product and his brand, and we understand that. And on the other hand, he doesn't want to offend the players that he needs to go out there and perform for him that he's got under his stewardship as the owner for the Dallas Cowboys. It's perfectly understandable. Here's the part that I think that Jerry Jones has missed in all of this. First of all, let's be very, very clear. As the person that has called him out the loudest, that would be me. I never called him out to take a position. Jerry Jones was not required to take the position that I would want him to take, Molly, Lewis, Max, or anybody else would want him to take. What I abhorred was his silence. Because if you're going to be front and center mandating that no player wearing your uniform would take a knee, et cetera, where were you when all of this went down? If you're going to be outspoken and on the front lines then don't disappear for months at a time once all of this happens because of George Floyd's killing. That's what I was saying. Stand front and center in whatever position you have, you have. I don't care what position it is. You just had, in my opinion, an obligation to let us know, since you were so quick to let us know where you stood all those other times. That's number one. Number two, and more importantly, and I'll end it by saying this. Remember, Jerry Jones said, you know what, he showed grace, etc. He just wants to make sure people understand where the players are coming from. Well, if they didn't understand where the players were coming from, Jerry Jones had everything to do with that, because he would not allow his players to get into it. He made it very, very clear to them. They had one choice and one choice only if they were going to be a Dallas Cowboy. He didn't give them the option. Let's remember that while we listen to him. But I'm glad he finally spoke, because all I cared about was to hear what he has to say. You don't get to be outspoken, and then when stuff really hits the fan, you hide for months at a time. That was my only issue with Jerry Jones.
Earlier, I need a Cowboys translation machine on this show today. Fortunately, I have one right here. And earlier, I had to run Michael Irvin's comments through it. Remember that, when he compared him to the 73-wing Warriors getting KD because they now have CeeDee Lamb? And I am a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I'm hoping for the best. Jerry Jones, let me run what he just said through the translation machine so you understand, everybody. All he's saying here is, I want all of your money. I don't discriminate this group or that group. I just want you all to give me money, all of you. So if you're on this side of the issue, I understand. Please don't stop giving me money. And if you're on that side of the issue, I got it. I just want the money, everybody. I want you to patronize my product. And that's the line he's walking. Even when he uses the word grace, I was unclear. Did he mean grace as in kind of politeness and social manner, showing goodwill? Or did he mean grace in the religious sense? And if he did, is that a dog whistle to a lot of people in an area who have deeply held, you know, feelings about that? Is he, everything he just said amounted to nothing other than, hey, everyone needs to give me money. Everyone needs to be watching the Cowboys. Let's not exclude anybody here. Is there a line I can walk where I don't tick you off or tick you off, or I include you and you so you can all get together and give me that cash? That's what Jerry Jones just said.
Yeah, he just articulated what I think many of us have already known about the majority of owners. And it's not, you know, it's not something they should be ashamed of. They're businessmen, and that's what they're in. They're in the business of making money. So I think maybe he can substitute the word grace with the word empathy. He's saying, hey, look, if you're on this side, have empathy for the players and the fact that they're not trying to disrespect the flag and they're trying to bring attention to social injustices that are going on. I mean, obviously, the murder of George Floyd being front and center. If you're on this side and you're, you know, you're a war veteran, or you have, you know, firmly held beliefs about the flag and how you're supposed to honor the flag, let's have empathy for them and what their feelings are. And he is going to camp out right down the middle. And Max, as you said, he's going to say, I understand your side. I understand your side. And in the end, I just don't want this to be bad for business. So how can I placate both sides? How can I give you what you want? How can I give you what you want? So everybody, so this entire thing called the NFL, you know, billion-dollar enterprise just continues to grow, because I don't want it to affect the bottom line. He's a businessman. All 32 owners are businessmen. That's what they all want. That's what he just articulated, well, pretty much, which he could, which we all knew. And Stephen A., as you said, we just wanted to hear you say it.
If it's about business and it was strictly about that, guys, then clearly he must believe black folks aren't patronizing his product, because when he took the position that he took against Colin Kaepernick and against kneeling, he didn't have any idea what the fallout was going to be from the African-American community. Or maybe he did, and maybe he drew the conclusion that, excuse me, no matter what position I take on this, they're not going anywhere. So that's something to take into consideration as well. I don't believe it was just about business. I think it was about a certain constituents, a certain audience that he wanted to placate in the past, whereas this situation, you have to placate everybody. And I think that's what we saw this morning.
I think, Stephen, I think there was an assumption at first when Kaepernick kneeled that that was a very small minority viewpoint, and that the vast majority of patrons felt differently. And so he took that position. When he saw, wait, it's a little bigger than I thought, then he knelt with all the players, remember? And now what he sees and what this pandemic has laid bare for everyone is black athletes and their allies are saying, wait a minute, since we're a lot of us play these sports that you want to escape from reality from, no, you're not going to escape from reality, until normal is normal for everyone, not just white people, right? And so now we're at that point where Jerry Jones put his finger in the air to see which way the wind was blowing again and said, this is about 50-50, maybe even more people on the other side, but maybe in my region, not as many people. I can't alienate anyone here. Everybody, give me the dough. And I think that's why the delay.
Yeah. I was unimpressed. It took him over 3 months to come up with that. It's kind of weak sauce. I will leave it at that for the wealthiest franchise in sports history. Lewis, thank you so much for being with us. Max Kellerman, Stephen A. We'll be back at it tomorrow. Of course, we got a doubleheader here on ESPN tonight. Any final words from you?
I'm glad he spoke. At least he said something, and he's not hiding any longer.